When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.
Dr. Robert Melillo is a clinician. He is a professor, a brain researcher. He is a best-selling author. He is one of the most respected specialists in the area of childhood neurological disorders in the United States. Welcome to the show, Dr. Melillo.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, excited to have you on. Tell us a little about your personal life, some more about your work, and why you do what you do.
I started out, really going into the healthcare field because I was an athlete growing up. And, I always kind of looked into exercise and diet and nutrition. It was important to me. In high school, I fell in love with anatomy and physiology. And I really wanted to, do something in the health field. I felt most natural going to chiropractic school because, again, it was what had always helped me a lot. But when I was there, I fell in love with neurology and neuroscience. And from there, I always had a thought that I wanted to somehow try to combine sports medicine, rehab, neurology together in some way. So when I graduated, I went for a subspecialty in neurology, and then I went for one in rehabilitation. I also eventually went for another degree in clinical rehabilitation neuropsychology, and I have a PhD in developmental cognitive neuroscience. I combined that all together over my whole life, my whole career, and I very early on was really involved with looking at complex neurological issues and rehabilitating that in some way. But then around 1995, my son was diagnosed with ADHD. And I knew a lot about the brain already at that point because I had been teaching clinical neurology on a graduate level and doing some brain research, but I didn't really know what ADHD was. So I went around and asked people that I thought would know, people like psychologists, pediatricians, pediatric neurologists, and they all basically said the same thing. We really have no idea what it is, but you can't really do anything about it anyway. And I said, you just told me you don't know what it is, and how can you tell me you can't do anything about it, right? So at that point, with a father's interest and a professional interest, I really decided to kind of dive into it myself. Eventually, hooked up with some people and researchers around the world that really kind of knew what they were talking about. And really that became a focus of my interest. About 10 years in, I wrote a textbook called Neurobehavioral Disorders of Childhood and Evolutionary Perspective. And along the way, I developed some ways of actually working, not just with kids with ADHD, but with all types of neurobehavioral disorders. And that kind of has been my career from there, really trying to understand the brain at its deepest level, how it functions, what we call functional neurology or functional neuroscience. And that's where my life has been about. And I've done a lot of research. I've published 100 papers, over 100 papers. I head up a research lab. I've been a postgraduate professor for many years, and I have 2 active practices in New York.
Excellent. Neurobehavior disorder. Does that mean my brain's not working right?
It's not that it's not working right. It's just working different than it's supposed to. Most people, And that's the thing. I look at not just, I work not with just with children. I work with any developmental neurological issue. And when we look at most mental health issues in adults, they really start in childhood. We know that. So there's something that goes a little bit off in early childhood that creates a different way of the brain developing and growing. And it's, and the people that are most gifted are the ones that are most vulnerable. So it is not really, most in most cases, there's no damage, there's no injury, there's no genetic mutation, there's not chemical imbalances. It's what we call functional connectivity. The way the brain connects and communicates isn't just quite right, where areas might be faster than normal and other areas might be slower than normal.
So it's not, I had some trauma. It's not that something actually physically happened to my brain. It's emotional.
It's developmental. So it's not even emotional, because it's when the brain is being wired in early childhood. The way the human brain develops is very complicated compared to really any other brain. That's because of all, you know, primates, we have the largest brain per body size. But because we're the only bipedal ones, we have the smallest birth canal. So we have to keep our brain relatively restricted more than any other animal in the womb. And when we're born, our brain is only about 20-25%, which means 75 to 80% of our brain development happens outside the womb. No other animal really has to endure that. And so the development of our brain outside the womb is, it makes our brain the most adaptable brain, but it also makes it the most vulnerable, that if something throws off the development of our brain in early childhood, especially in the first 6 years, it will alter the way our brain is for the rest of our life. And it doesn't have to be because of some emotional trauma. That could do it, what we call adverse childhood experiences. But more often than not, it may actually happen in the womb, or it may happen during the birth process itself, because it's more difficult for humans. Most of the things that we see, there is no actual injury, damage in the brain. There's no metabolic disease. There is no clear-cut genetic mutation. These are functional developmental network imbalances that come about, and we can change them at any point.
That's fascinating. Do you think that that's why what you just described prior to you entering this field, that a lot of people said there's just nothing to be done about ADHD?
Yeah, I don't think, honestly, George, I don't think anybody really did as deep a dive as I think you should to really understand the brain and brain development. Even now, there are very few people that really understand the way the brain grows, develops, and functions in the most optimal way, in a way that they're also thinking like a clinician, how do I change it, right? So if you have, let's say, some really high-level neuroscientist that may understand the intricate workings of the brain, they may not understand how it develops that way, or they may just be a scientist that never works with a patient or a person, or, you know, how does this translate into, what we're going to do to change it. So I think that, you know, I've had a unique combination of being a high level researcher, a clinician, and somebody who's really had a wide variety of background and exposure, that I didn't just think, okay, we need to just medicate something or whatever. I could, you know, use many, many different tools to be able to say, how do we actually change the brain?
I think that we've all heard that your brain isn't fully formed until around 25. Is that true?
Actually, I think it's much later than that. The study that showed that our brain isn't fully mature until 25, only looked till 25, right? So we didn't look beyond it. But our brain is actually myelinating, meaning it's creating new, you know, coverings of brain cells until we're around 50. So I think that our brain is still developing into our 40s. And I think that, you know, that's where we can see developmental issues that may show up you know, in our 30s and 40s that really started in childhood. It's about if the trajectory of our brain is altered in some way, it may not impact us till much later on. So, you know, at 3 years old, we may recognize something like autism. At 6 or 7, you know, we might see something like ADHD, you know, learning disability, dyslexia, we may not recognize until 10, 11, 12. Schizophrenia doesn't show up until its 20s. Bipolar often doesn't show up until 30s. So, you know, I think that all of them are developmental and started in childhood. And with that, I believe that if we're able to identify it early in childhood, where the brain goes off its normal developmental track, we can intervene then, and I think we can prevent somebody from having schizophrenia or bipolar or something later on in life that they may, you know, not have had to have.
So you are a detective. You're Sherlock Holmes trying to get to the bottom of why something is happening the way it is. But when you look at the brain, you can't necessarily see that there's a disorder. So how does that all work?
Yeah. Well, yeah, you're right, because what I'm really about is what is the root cause, you know, not just superficial and not just managing symptoms, but what is the root cause and how does it get that way? And so one of the areas that I've looked at and I've researched pretty much more than anybody in the world right now is something called retained primitive reflexes. So when we're born, and as I said, you know, our brains are unique, even before birth, you know, the genes that regulate the growth and development of our brain are unique in that, one, it makes up about 84% of all of our genes are there just to grow our brain. And they're the most sensitive genes because they have to really know when we're in the womb versus when we're outside the womb. And
Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Save $100 on the Craftsman V20 6-Tool Power Tool Combo Kit, now at $199. No matter what the project is, Craftsman's high-quality, high-performance products empower you to build on. Stop by your nearest Lowe's store and check out the full line of Craftsman tools today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
And when we get outside, we're bombarded by sensory input that causes our brain to grow, but that needs all to be driven by movement. And so we have, you know, the part of our brain that really eventually controls our movement isn't there yet. So we're born with these reflexes in our brainstem called primitive reflexes, and they're there before birth. They help make sure that a baby gets in the right position before birth, so that they're upside down and backwards and deep down in the birth canal, and they don't have the cord wrapped around their neck. And then these reflexes help them push themselves out of the womb. And then when they're first born, they help them through, you know, first latching on. And right off the bat, many of those things in the patients we work with, kids or adults, had a problem. You know, they were presentation, or they had the cord wrapped around their neck, or they weren't deep enough down in birth canal, or they were in the right wrong position, or they may have needed help getting out of the womb, or they were born by C-section because they weren't getting out. So right off the bat, it tells me that these reflexes may not be there. And then these reflexes should be there. And the first one is, you know, they should be able to latch on. And we have about 85-90% of the kids that we work with, especially the non-speaking autistic individuals, who couldn't latch on from the beginning. So anyway, these reflexes should lead us through that first year, and it should be very specific. You know, we hear things like, oh, you know, everybody develops in their own way, and there's this wide range. And I think that's not true. I think there's a very specific way that the brain is supposed to be built early on in that first year. And, you know, right around 12 months, every kid should really be able to walk a few steps, talk a few words, and point and have good eye contact. So if that doesn't happen, to me, that's the earliest sign that, hey, something may be going off track. And so then we can start to intervene then to get them back on track so that really significant imbalances don't develop later on. And the earlier we can get to people, the quicker we can reverse that. But we can usually reverse this at any age, or we can change it dramatically. And it really starts with getting rid of these reflexes, because if they don't come on when they're supposed to, they don't go away when they're supposed to. But there are other ways also of being able to understand and look at throughout someone's life if they've developed a functional imbalance. And we can actually look at the brain with very sophisticated, what's called QEG, and really see if the brain is connected and wiring and talking to one another the way it should.
That is really interesting. Fascinating. All of it, the retained primitive reflexes to just fascinating, and the inability to latch. I've got three kids, so I understand what that is and how important that is, which is it's for breastfeeding, for those who don't know what that is. So let's just use a fictitional fourth child of mine, that little Johnny is born, product of a C-section, inability to latch, and then some years in is demonstrating ADHD type behaviors. So we come to Dr. Melillo. He talks about that. He says, okay, let's see what we can do. What is the protocol regimen?
Yeah, well, there are different types of ADHD. So there are three different subtypes, and but the main one that we look at, the classic hyperactive, impulsive, inattentive type, is due to a delay in development in the right brain. So the right brain, the right hemisphere, should be taking the lead in development in the first 3 years. And then the left brain comes on for the next 3 years. And that is what creates the differences between our right brain and our left brain, which are very, very important, because we have the most asymmetrical brain of any animal. And we know that as you go up the animal kingdom, the more lateralized the brain is, the more sophisticated the brain is. It effectively gives us two brains in one, and two consciousness in one. But the key is we have to integrate that. So the brain builds from the bottom up and then comes from the top down. So there's what we call vertical integration. And then there's horizontal, this balance between the left and the right, where they shift in their focus, but one should not dominate too much over the other. And what happens is that these primitive reflexes don't go away when they're supposed to at one. This is right at the peak of right brain development. And what we've been able to show in our research is it then holds the brain back. It keeps it in a more immature state. And then if you take someone that's extremely gifted with their left brain, that may come online too early. And then it pushes that right brain down, and they may regress, or they may get these early left brain skills. We get some kids that are reading at the age of one. They can memorize a book completely at 18 months. Wow. No one should be able to do that. They already have a phenomenal memory for certain details. But then we also see overactivity of certain areas on the left as well, like that may cause hyperactivity, or tics, or OCD behavior, or anger outbursts, or too much inflammation and overactivity of their immune system. And then an underdevelopment of the right brain, which is what ultimately pays a sustained attention to the world, which is what we need mostly in school, is social development, emotional, reading other people, connecting to our body, and inhibiting a lot of what the left brain is doing so that it doesn't get out of control. So we have somewhat of a deficit on that right side. So what we need to do is, one, what's holding back development so that the brain stays in a more immature state? We see that the brain has slower brain waves because that's how it starts out. And there isn't as much communication. So we need to be able to remove that. So by getting rid of those reflexes that are retained, that kind of unleashes the brain. But now we have this developmental imbalance where one side of the brain is dominating too much over the other. And we need to correct that. We need to change that by stimulating one side with many different types of stimulus, like movement, different types of sensory stimulation, vibration, light, sound, different frequencies of sound, eye movements, vestibular inner ear, You know, we can use different types of smells are specific for right brain or left brain. We can stimulate one ear over the other or one side of the body over the other. And then we can use different brain stimulating tools like transcranial direct current or alternating current that goes right on the head and can actually gently stimulate the brain and activate one side and inhibit the other. We have different light or photobiomodulation with, you know, red light or infrared light that can actually change the frequency. We can use different vitamins and supplements and diets to be able to change the brain as well and reduce inflammation. We can do different academic type training, word reading versus, so you get it. There's a million different things we can do that are tailored, but the bottom line is, what we're going to do is we're first going to get rid of those reflexes, bring them out and get rid of them. And then we're going to improve their movement, their coordination, their overall, you know, feel of their body. And then we're going to stimulate one side of the brain in very specific areas that are different to each person. And then we're going to try to quiet areas on the other side to create this balance. And that's what we would do.
Incredible. Incredible. What do you attribute the increase of incidence of these issues to be?
Well, my third book was all about, you know, what is really causing this. The first chapter is, are we facing an epidemic? And I think, you know, I interviewed a number of different epidemiologists and did research for a while. And the answer is clearly that there is an epidemic. You know, the idea that we're just recognizing these things more, and they were always there, doesn't really fit with what we see with our eyes. If you speak to teachers that have been in schools for many years, they'll tell you there's more and more kids with these issues every year. So, you know, we know that there is an epidemic, and there is no such thing as a genetic epidemic. So this is not because of genetic mutations suddenly popping up out of nowhere. It doesn't work that way. But they are built on traits, and the trait that something like autism and ADHD are built on is also known as an intellect trait. It's basically a left brain type of style of thinking, what we call cognitive style. And people that are, you know, left brain dominant, a guy named Simon Baron Cohen out of Cambridge years ago showed that in families of kids with autism, there was many more physicists, mathematicians, engineers. He later showed also people in the finance, doctors, lawyers, and then showed that especially in the IT industry, like Silicon Valley has the highest concentration of autism in the world, that, you know, there was this trait that was built on that most parents don't have the diagnosis or most siblings don't have a diagnosis, but they do have a similar personality trait that runs in the families. And that trait, when it gets too much, if it's too strong, it can create a vulnerability. So what we see, one reason why we see it increasing is because we're moving more and more towards a left brain dominant world. And we're rewarding more and more people that think in a left brain style. They usually do better academically. They have a better memory for facts and details. They're, you know, they can read early and they're more analytical. They're more logical and they do better in school and they tend to go to better colleges and make more money. And if you look at autism and ADHD and most of the neurobehavioral disorders, as you go up the socioeconomic scale, you're actually more likely to have a child with autism or ADHD. And that's not, so it's not a byproduct of neglect or bad environment. It's actually something too good. But otherwise, there are definitely environmental factors that can happen preconception that can alter, as I said, 84% of the genes that are there that we have are there just for our brain. So they're the genes that most likely to be impacted by things like pesticides or chemicals in our environment or, you know, pollution or, you know, any sort of stressful, bad, you know, situation that might happen. And boys in particular, our brains are more susceptible because In the womb, we start out really as females, and meaning that, you know, the body plan and the brain plan, whether you have a Y or X chromosome, is female, and we need to be converted to a male. And that's much more complicated and requires the right concentration of the right hormones at the right time. And so, you know, there's many factors that come together. Bottom line is lifestyle and environmental factors are what's driving it. And we're moving more and more towards that. And that is what I think is creating most of this epidemic that we see.
Thank you. Well, Dr. Melillo, thank you so much for coming on. Where can people learn more about you? How can they engage with you?
Yeah, I have a website, drrobertmelillo.com. There's a lot of information on there. I have various courses, online courses for professionals, for parents. You know, there's a lot of people can access my books through Amazon or anywhere else. I have 8 best-selling books. Disconnected Kids is the most common one. That just came out in its 3rd edition last summer, and it's been translated into about 18 languages worldwide. My papers are all open access. You can go and you can get them and download them from PubMed or Google Scholar. I have a podcast called The Melillo Method podcast, Everything Brain, that people can access on Spotify. I do another podcast with my daughter called The Right Brain, W-R-I-T-E. She's more geared towards, she's a singer-songwriter in Nashville, and we have a lot of people in that community on it. And then I have 2 practices in New York. Again, they can access me also. I'm on Instagram. I'm pretty active in social media. So at Dr. Robert Melillo.
Excellent. Well, if you enjoyed this as much as I did, show Dr. Melillo your appreciation. Share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Go to drrobertmelillo.com. It's drrobertmelillo.com. And check out all the great resources that Dr. Melillo has put up there. Check out the podcast, The Melillo Method. Pick up one of his best-selling books. The most recent that he just talked about is Disconnected Kids. We'll certainly link that. If you're in the New York area, you can obviously find him physically there and follow him on Instagram as well. Thanks again, Dr. Melillo.
Thank you.
Until next time, remember, do your part by doing your best.